Welcome, everybody, to the new hearing room. It's the first time I've seen it. It's sharp and very nice looking. Is it comfortable?
Madam Chair, I might suggest that the, given the previous hearing we had on the Columbia Gorge and the visually subordinate and earth tone friendly language of the hearing, that this is in keeping with those comments. It's very visually subordinate and definitely in earth tones.
Yes, it is, although there's no more green, so, you know. Where's the Green Party? I don't know.
No, Madam Chair, it's because we have no money. That's why there's no green in the room.
I see. Okay. Thank you, Representative Krupp. There are some changes to the schedule. We apologize. We're opening a little late. This is the last meeting of this committee, and so we have had lots to do, a flurry of activity. So welcome. The changes will be the Salmon Recovery Task Force report will be at 11:30 instead of 10. The work session scheduled to be at 2 instead of 10:30. The Oregon Land Use Law and Policy Overview instead of 2 p.m. will be at 10:30, switching it to morning. And those are the changes. So thank you, everybody, for coming. And we will go to our opening 9:30 agenda item, and that is the Department of Land Conservation and Development. Welcome.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Co-Chair Close and Co-Chair Ferrioli. It's a pleasure to be here this morning. I am Paul Curcio, Director of the Department of Land Conservation and Development. We appreciate the opportunity to speak with the committee this morning and share our thoughts on a couple of issues. One is, let me extend our chairman's regrets that he had to leave before the item commenced. Chair Franke, of course, is an ongoing force and leadership source for the department and for the commission, as I know you all are aware.
Mr. Curcio, could I interrupt
yes.
you for just a minute? I wanted to make sure that all the committee knew you and had met you. And so before you continue, I just want to welcome you to the committee and welcome you to Oregon and to tell the committee that Mr. Curcio has a very varied background in public sector policy combined with architecture and planning. And he has his degree, Master of Public Administration from the Kennedy School of Government, Harvard University in Cambridge. Also has a Master's of Architecture and a Bachelor of Architectural Studies, University of Illinois. So we appreciate your extensive background and want to welcome you.
Thank you for that welcome. I might also add that I spent a good, 10 years of my career in the private sector working for development interests as well as for different consulting companies. So I think that's an asset that I bring in terms of being able to see development and planning from many different perspectives. The, as a matter of fact, the work that I've done in my first, I suppose it's 9 months now, at the department has been to go out and visit with different communities throughout Oregon. I've had an opportunity to go to Medford, and Southern Oregon, and Central Oregon, Bend, and Redmond. I've gone out to Pendleton and Joseph, and had many, many opportunities to meet with our leaders in the Portland area as well as on the coast. And I'm happy to report that it's clear to me that the program has many supporters and it has many accomplishments that the state should be incredibly proud of, and I know the state and its leadership does recognize. The Department of Land Conservation and Development is looked at from many different states and many different jurisdictions throughout the U.S. and throughout the world as a leader in planning, and I think we should be very proud of that. I also think that we need to realize that a program that's 30 years old, that has grown incrementally and has layers of legislation on top of rules, on top of case law, is naturally going to become complex and cumbersome. While I've heard many very positive things about our program, and I think we're all aware of the accomplishments, I also think that we need to be attuned to the very clear message that for many, it is too cumbersome, too expensive, and too time-consuming. This is not a message that has gone unheard, and it's one that we're probing to understand more deeply so that we can find out how best to fine-tune the program to fit the very different needs of the different parts of Oregon. Clearly, this notion of one-size-fits-all, it's an easy cliche. We're all looking for certainty. We're all looking for predictability in land use. We're all looking for a type of equity that people see in a consistently applied program throughout the state. be that as it may, the program also has to allow for the different conditions in rural Oregon and urban communities. I've handed out a two- or three-page document labeled the LCDC and DLCD vision. It's actually the vision, mission, goals, strategic intent, objectives, and performance measures for the department. I will not walk you through that. I leave it to you to review at your leisure. I do think it's important to note that this represents a very broad participatory process. It represents input from our stakeholders, it represents input from our staff, and it represents the decision and leadership of our commission. Probably, just if I could highlight just a few of the things that I think are very important, is the notion of on the first page on vision, of our position, what it is we really want to be known for, a dedication for resource protection and growth management, an aspiration for innovative, sustainable urban development, a contribution to the state's economic competitiveness, and a pledge to always work to earn the public's trust. Those are values and attributes that are very strongly held and deeply held by the people in our community, and I think the department will continue to aspire to those. The mission speaks very plainly, very simply. We're here to support local government, our partners, in making sure that they have comprehensive plans, land use plans, and zoning that implements the state planning program goals. Our goals cover both what we do internally and what we do externally. I think they speak for themselves. They are tied to the performance measures on the next page that in turn will link to our budgets. At the request of the legislature and with the help of the Progress Board, we have moved towards a results-based, outcome-driven budgeting effort that keys off of these performance measures. I salute the leadership that initiated that. I think it is a hallmark of good government. The strategic intent section is another area that I would draw your attention to, because this really speaks to the change, if you will, that we think the department needs to focus on. An assured common vision of a livable Oregon. We need to re-engage the people of Oregon so that we have a common understanding of what it is we want our land use program to achieve. Rules are not a substitute for vision. I think there's an awful lot of conversation and energy focused on rules and rule amendments, and I think those are necessary and appropriate. But it's also important for us to keep them in perspective as they serve a vision, not a replacement for a vision. The idea of promoting regional collaboration and coordinated local decision-making, many people perceive that the program has become too Salem-centric and too state-dominated. I think it is important that we reassure the notion that we're here to support local partners and that we help cement regional partnerships. I had the opportunity to attend the leadership summit yesterday downtown, and I think a very clear message from many parts of Oregon is the importance of economic competitiveness for the state. States, regions, jurisdictions that succeed, companies that succeed nationally in a global economy, rely on regional collaboration. One of the things government can do is to help to build that network of regional collaboration. I'm not quite sure what we need to do in that arena, but I do think that's one area that we should focus on. Predictability and certainty in land use decisions and plans has always been a basic tenet of the program. It continues to be. However, the perception is by many that that's a reality yet to be achieved. We need to examine that and make sure that we live to that word. Integrating state agency plans and programs with decreasing resources and increasing expectations, we need to make sure that the infrastructure investments from economic development or from ODOT, in fact, align with the land use priorities established by communities, and the state is, in fact, concentrating and focusing and integrating its investments to help communities achieve their vision. And finally, aligning public revenue investment with statewide planning objectives. It's no news to any of you that the budget dilemma is serious, and we need to pay especially close attention to what we invest in and make sure that from a departmental level and from a community level that those decisions are made in terms of optimizing the value that's created for our citizens and our communities. Given that, I know the reason I'm One of the reasons that we were asked to come today was to talk about secondary lands. My observation on secondary lands...
Can I stop you a minute, Mr. Kershaw? I want to ask the committee, after you've given out this sheet, if they have questions on your, this first presentation.
Madam Chair, please.
Representative Crook.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I actually have several. I need some clarification in regard to your LCDC and DLCD strategic objectives portion. In fact, I have questions on almost every single point there. The first one is, and with the indulgence of the Chair, if I may just go through these. Number one, you say increase the percentage of fully serviced land. What do you mean by fully serviced? I'm not familiar.
Shovel ready.
Pardon?
Shovel ready.
Shovel ready.
I.e., the water is there, the sewer is there, the roads are there, the electricity is there.
Okay. Number two, increase the percentage of land within UGBs that is planned for efficient, livable development and developed to its planned level of use. Is that really kind of referring to density requirements, or is this something else there that you're, the point you're trying to get across?
There are, excuse me, Co-Chair Close, Co-Chair Furioli, members of the committee. The basic thought there is that we have heard from numerous jurisdictions that there is significant portions of land within UGBs that is not fully utilized. It may be zoned for high-density residential development, or it may be zoned for medium-density commercial development or medium-intensity commercial development, but its current use might be a parking lot, or its current use might be a fallow field. The notion of putting in place incentives and or other controls or mechanisms to encourage that land be brought to its full use is a first priority in making sure that urbanized areas are fully developed before we expand.
Okay. And moving down to number four, increase public understanding and civic engagement in land use planning. How do you intend to increase public understanding and engagement? What's your ideas how to do that?
Well, the co-chair, close co-chair, Furioli, and members of the committee, the basic message there is, first and foremost, there is a lack of understanding, breadth of understanding, about the purpose of the state's land use planning program and the benefits of the state's land use planning program in the history of the state's land use planning program. The current population of Oregon, at least half of the people that are here now, were probably not here when Senate Bill 100 was passed. Of those that participated in that process, many of them perhaps have had experiences that have changed their own expectations for what the program should do. Now is the time in the life cycle of the program to re-engage Oregonians on what it is they want to see the state do in terms of land use planning and how the program should be designed, and for them to understand, the very important objective of land use planning in optimizing scarce public and private resources to, in fact, create wealthy, healthy, livable communities. What we need to do to achieve that is unfolding. There are many different mechanisms we need to use. We need to partner with perhaps universities in hosting forums and panels so that it becomes less a discussion of ideology and more a discussion of facts and consequences of different policies. For example, we may want to have a panel and a series of white papers on the importance of infrastructure investment and the importance of bond financing for infrastructure. Having focus panels and outreach efforts on specific questions that are critical to intelligent, smart development, I think will help engage the people of Oregon and make the planning program real. We need to improve our webpage. We need to improve our external communications. We need to work more closely with our local partners. There are a variety of communication messages and mechanisms that we need to deploy to achieve that.
Okay, well, thank you. And I think it's a very, very good point, because I think you really hit the nail on the head. That's why I asked the question, is I think there is a great deal of misunderstanding out there in some areas. And I think that the educational component is, I think, critical in the future to us really understanding how we can make this system more efficient. Make it, two more quick questions. Number five.
One more, Representative Krupp.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
This is a two-part question, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator. I'll
4A.
How do you intend to increase your efficiencies and effectiveness with local agencies and citizens? Do you have specific plans in mind how to achieve that? And that kind of gets back to the question we just talked about.
We are, Co-Chair Close, Co-Chair Fioli, members of the committee, we're exploring numerous mechanisms, especially in this severe budget situation, to get the most out of very limited resources. Very quickly, we are moving towards a reorganization of the department away from functional specialization to geographic targeted representatives matrixed against specialists. So in other words, there'll be two divisions instead of four. We're reducing the amount of management. We're increasing the number of people in the field. One division will be field staff that are, where the individuals are specifically assigned to geographies of the state, the coast, the valley, metro, central Oregon, and eastern Oregon, and southern Oregon. Those individuals will draw expertise from specialists in the other division so that we get the most efficiency out of the design of the organization. We share specialists across all the geographies. That's a simple organizational approach. In addition to that, we're looking at different ways to use our grant money. We receive approximately $3 million, or 30% of our general fund money, in grants from the general fund. We've used that that money, I think, very intelligently in the past to support local planning efforts and planning operations. Some of that money goes to periodic reviews. Some of it goes to plan amendments. Some of it goes for technical assistance. We are revisiting our strategy for how that money is awarded and deployed to make sure that it is leveraged so that communities that receive that money, in fact, are producing products that may be used by other communities. And we're not reinventing the wheel across the state. And that as part of the grant award, they may be required, in fact, to share the product with other jurisdictions. Another idea is that we may move from multiple award grants to larger single award grants to jurisdictions and or regional entities where they then subcontract to smaller jurisdictions. In other words, you get some scale economy out of the awards. You're not, rather than doing 10 $10,000 grants, you do one $100,000 grant. You have fewer contracts to process at the local level, and you perhaps can, if there's a jurisdiction willing to be a service provider for the smaller communities in that region, they in fact can provide a greater continuity and a greater economy in providing those services. If you will, a contract service planning department. Those are just a few ideas. We have many more. We're open to new ones, but we're exploring every avenue possible.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes. I have a question. I'm going to stretch you a little here. Now, you've made some generalizations, so now I'm going to ask you to apply it to a certain situation. You said you want to help communities achieve their vision and support local governments. And I want to ask you about a recent situation in Boardman where you had a rural community that wanted to develop a racetrack, and your agency objected and intervened in that. Can you explain to us why and how that fits in with supporting local government?
I will, Co-Chair Close, Co-Chair Fioli, members of the committee, I will do my best to recall the situation. This was one of the first appeals that I was actually asked to sign. I did so reluctantly. And, but I did so at the advice of my staff, and I think for a very good reason. We have a very complicated legalistic system. Part of helping local communities is to make sure that the decisions that they make are sustainable. In other words, upon appeal by other parties and challenges by other parties, that in fact the record is clear and they can move forward expeditiously. One of the elements of the racetrack at Boardman was a residential component, a housing component, a temporary lodging component. And that, according to the rules, as I understand them, is not an allowable use where it's considered an urban use. The way that that specific project was presented and what was in the record was they did not identify that component as an essential component to the racetrack operation for which they were seeking an exception.
Are you talking about workers to work here? Housing for workers?
No, this was for temporary lodging. It was a high-end hotel. It was a high-end hotel for temporary use by members of the racing community that would be attending. And what we asked them to do was to go back and amend the record and make it clear that, in fact, this was an essential component of the racing operation. And I indicated in the hearing, and I indicated to them privately, that upon you know, resubmittal with that clarification, that we would support the exception. So again, our purpose in filing that appeal was to make sure that it was sustainable for that jurisdiction, as well as protecting the precedent of not allowing hotelery as a allowable use outside of urban areas, and only allowing it when it was an ancillary and required use as part of an exception for a commercial purpose.
Senator Burial.
Madam Chairman, I just wondered if, Mr. Kircher, you went to the economic summit yesterday.
Yes, I did.
And did you attend the land use planning?
Yes, I did.
My impression is that there's a lot of demand pent up for a top-to-bottom review of LCDC. 30-year history has led people to conclude that it's time maybe for not just tweaking the system. I think it was characterized by one of the presenters in the panel. We're not after throwing the baby out with the bathwater, but we'd like to find the baby in the bathwater. Mm-hmm. Relative to LCDC. And there were some real specific recommendations that came from a panel of people that I consider to be the most knowledgeable in Oregon about land use. And those are the elected public officials and the administrators and the business people that have worked with the system, planners, lobbyists. It was a pretty good discussion. And there were some real specific recommendations that have come out of that meeting. And I'm wondering if your attempt at outreach and communications and reorganization are being done in a, on a parallel track, or are they intersecting tracks, or are you going to stop, look, listen, and then proceed, having been informed by the articulated needs of communities? And then, you know, I'm talking about the fact that although communities have zoned lands that may be adequate according to the paper plan, they're suitable, they're just not available. So suitable and available are questions that are not connected in LCDC. You have administrators of the land use plan saying no, because on paper you've met your requirements statistically, but when you go try to find the shovel ready land you refer to, it's not available. And the reason is that urban growth boundaries have caused land banking to become a primary investment opportunity. People buy these properties and they sit on them because they know that you're not allowing anymore to become competitive to lower the prices, and scarcity is an element of value. So the undeveloped land has a relatively low tax burden, so it doesn't cost much to hold the appreciation value of that investment. And the longer it's held, the greater its potential value. And the day you make the decision to invest is the day that you essentially stop the appreciation for the investment purposes originally. So suitable and available is a big issue. Industrial lands are certainly not adequate. I think Hood River County talked about the port owning the only the entire stock of developable lands within Hood River County for industrial purposes. 10 acres is all that Hood River County has in that zoning. People talked thoroughly about the difference between assigning industrial opportunities by population of communities, which permanently disadvantages all small communities. Is there an industrial component? It's designated by the population of the community, not by the community need for its own stability. There's just a whole bunch of changes related to not having a programmatic review in 30 years that would be addressed and will be addressed, and I have the very definite perception that LCDC is going to suffer a case of whiplash, and that is I think this governor is going to implement some of these recommendations by executive direction, and I think he's going to expect the legislature to be responsive. I think he's going to direct your agency to do a programmatic review to assess your effect on economic needs and sustainability, with the economy being a primary focus. And I guess I need to hear that while you're in the process of reestablishing connection with the community, that you reassess the vision and you ask yourself just whose vision, and if you're decentralizing into rural and regional areas, you're probably on the right track. But there's an awful lot of good information and direction that's going to come out of this new administration. I want to make sure you folks aren't a boat anchor tied to the ship of state, that you're actually going to be out there surfing the wave of change to make the sustainability of communities your primary goal and change the way you do business. And I hear you talking about a reorganization plan that looks backwards. I want to hear how you are going to get out on the front of this wave and move forward to economic sustainability for rural communities, especially, and all communities in America generally.
Is that a question?
Yeah. I mean, look, he was in the room. I was in the room. I heard a lot of good information, a lot of energy, and a lot of very pointed suggestions for changing the way LCDC works without destroying the structure of land use planning in Oregon or overturning LCDC, but basically making it more servient to communities and not an obstacle to development, which clearly is being perceived as.
Co-Chair Close and Co-Chair Frioli, I was at the meeting. I did hear those observations. And I guess several thoughts I would share with the committee. One is many of those observations are not new. I have heard those. We are not denying, either the commission or myself, in many cases, the validity of those observations. As a matter of fact, the effort that we are currently undertaking today, and I don't mean here, but I mean in a small group in Kaiser, we've invited a group of our stakeholders, and it's actually an open meeting with a subcommittee of LCDC to look at specifically how we need to reform the program, how we need to refocus the program to not only deal with the budget shortfall, but to deal with the economic development challenge that the state faces. If I were to prioritize a few of the items that I think will come out of that discussion with business leaders and community leaders, I believe that one of the items that will come to the very top of the list, which is also represented, if you kind of sort through our performance measures and objectives, you'll see that it's represented there as well, is the competitive supply of commercial, industrial, and residential land in our communities. And I use the word competitive supply because my master's at Harvard in public administration was in economic development. That was my effort. These are not notions that are unclear to me or I think inappropriate for the department to embrace. It is a very new way of thinking for this department to embrace. It is also an area of expertise that the department really doesn't have. One of the first things I did when I came here was I asked, well, who's our economic development specialist? Who's our planning specialist that really knows about the connection between land use planning and markets? And that is not an expertise that we currently have, and it's one that we probably need. Be that as it may, I think what we will see coming out of this conversation that we're currently having over the next month is a prioritization of resources at DLCD to lower our cost structure and to refocus the agency not just on the conservation part of the mission, but the development part of the mission. I think the items that are likely to come forward in terms of rules and or statutes or the topics that might need to be addressed to achieve that, one is looking at the urban growth boundary expansion process. I think the notion of urban growth boundaries is a hallmark of this system, and it's an important one, but it comes with a responsibility. We are artificially constraining the market. We have to do such a way. We have to do that in a way that doesn't cause the market to perform in an unhelpful way. For if there are only a few landowners that can hold a community hostage, can sit back and be subsidized for holding their land in a specific use, and then exact all the value because it's the only parcel left to develop, that's not in service to the community.
Madam Chairman, I think what I'm hearing is the direction I would like here, but I think you need to, I mean, acknowledge the fact that there's a lower percentage of Oregonians who are homeowners than any state west of the Mississippi. So if you look at home ownership patterns, we've failed to provide adequate housing and affordable rates for people in Oregon. That's clear. We have a higher percentage of renters and a lower percentage of homeowners in Oregon than almost any state of similar size in the West or similar economic demographic. Portland and Eugene have the highest relative housing costs of anywhere but Seattle that I know. I mean, so, you know, what you're talking about in terms of economic distortion of markets is directly related to land use planning.
Co-chair Close, Co-chair Frioli, I concur. And let me be short.
Fix it.
We need to fix the urban growth boundary expansion process, but we can't simply, as the speaker yesterday indicated, throw the baby out. His question is, how do we amend that process so that it works to bring land in on a performance basis that ensures orderly, efficient, effective growth and exacts from the land coming in the cost of the infrastructure to serve it? I think in a very simple minded way of saying it, that's what it needs to do. That's not what it currently does. So we need to take a look at it. We also need to take a look at periodic review.
You're dealing with legislators, so you need to keep it in a simple-minded parlance. Okay.
Thank you.
Madam Chairman, I don't need to go further on this line. Just the idea is 1,200 people met yesterday on economic development issues, and LCDC and land use planning and Oregon was a primary focus. A number of recommendations came out of the white papers. A number of ideas came out of the subcommittee discussion, and the governor took an hour of speech with 25 pages. He mentioned land use issues. And I think I'm hoping that this agency won't develop a new plan for reorganizing itself independent of that energy. Because what's going to happen is that they're going to get their information supply line stretched thin. And when this state begins to move, they're going to get left behind if that doesn't get integrated and become a focal point. That was my only point.
Well, thank you, Senator Frioli. And I think that Mr. Kershaw has heard that loud and clear. So we look forward to working closely with you. Representative King was next.
Great.
And then we'll go to Representative Tomei.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A little bit of follow-up that's a little more focused on the economic development piece, not as broad sweeping as the previous question, that we have a mission goal of yours of conservation and also a mission goal of economic development from, you know, other areas that are essential parts of the strategy of the state. And often it does come down to the fact that in the metro area we no longer have a large site to bring in a next Intel, major plant site, and that as much as we might like something like that to locate in Oak Ridge or Eastern Oregon or maybe Springfield has an opportunity there, but we have the site, but not necessarily a preferred location for some of those type of players. That one of your biggest policy issues will be there to address how do we make a large site available. But at the same time, meet the goals as we currently see it. That issue is primarily, as I understand it, up to Metro to be able to deal with their urban growth boundary. But it's not just a Metro issue. That economic development is a crucial component of the entire state of Oregon. Not just the urban growth boundary. And any concept you could offer on that, I appreciate. So we have two opposing goals. We have your
right.
Your conservation goal. We got the economic goal. Both of them are great goals, but it turns out that this one siting, is one of the primary nexus obstacles in accomplishing that goal.
Co-chair Close, Co-chair Frioli, members of the committee, Representative King has indeed focused in on a very sticky problem. The demand for industrial commercial land in today's market is directly related to the industrial clusters that are succeeding in our economy. Those are geographically specific. So where the industrial commercial land supply may be in the broader planning process that currently exists may not be where, in fact, the market wants to expand. And that, I think, is probably the fundamental problem, is that where many of those clusters currently exist, for example, in Washington County, if the growth was to be accommodated there, would compromise or call into question the conservation of prime or agricultural land in that area. I believe it's, and Ron can probably help me on this, it's 197-298, the priority lands statute.
That sounds right.
Yeah, which says when you expand an urban growth boundary, you take in the exception land before you take in agricultural land. And that may not always work in terms of providing that additional site next to the cluster that wants to expand. That's one problem. We're trying to tackle that. The second is, it's not a question of just bringing the land in and having the land available for expansion. It's having it available in 60 to 90 days. And that ties to the infrastructure question. Many times where the infrastructure may be most readily expanded and most cost-effectively expanded isn't where the priority land statute would take you. So those are two conflicting pieces of the conservation mission and the development mission that we're looking at. As you pointed out, it is in fact a tough issue.
Don't have time to work on it. It won't go away.
Representative Tillman.
Thank you, Chair Scott. Mr. Curcio, it sounds like you're talking about some fundamental policy changes, and I'm wondering if the Commission has directed you to overhaul the land use program.
Representative Co-Chair Friola, members of the committee, I don't believe I have received that specific direction. The Commission has approved and accepted the strategic plan, which you have before you, which begs those questions. How do you achieve these objectives and these performance measures absent revisiting some of these fundamental policy questions and the rules that implement them? We are currently, at the Commission's direction, engaging our stakeholders to surface areas of improvement in terms of economic development as well as the services we deliver. And I think out of that will have already been raised some of these fundamental policy questions and issues. So I think we will be tackling those, yes.
If that's the case, then our land use goals were established by a pretty exhaustive public process. And I'm wondering if you are intending to undertake, again, a process that would include many thousands of Oregonians. And if you plan to do that, it seems to me that that would be pretty costly, and if that's included in your budget request.
Co-Chair Close, Co-Chair Furioli, members of the committee, one of the first initiatives that the Commission and I discussed was re-engaging Oregonians, and we were hopeful in pursuit of a partnership with several nonprofit organizations and academic institutions in the Oregon area, or in the Oregon, in the, throughout the state of Oregon, that could help through third-party funding, through foundation funding, launch such an initiative. So it would actually be separate from the department and be a much broader, much more open engagement. To date, we haven't received positive notification of funding from any of the foundations. We'd identified that type of effort as costing close to $1 million.
Yes.
And probably taking at least a year. I would be happy to include it in our upcoming budget request. At this time, we're looking at reducing services and expenditures rather than adding them. We're doing our best with the resources we currently have and with our partners to engage as many stakeholders as possible in looking at some of these policy questions. I do believe that the goals, the 19 goals, are strongly held and will be sustained. The question is, how do we find the baby in the bathwater and simplify the system so that it's not cumbersome and unhelpful in terms of communities achieving their vision and is true to the goals. And that's the path we're on now.
Well, thank you very much. We are out of time, but I appreciate you
so graciously answering all the questions of the committee. And we'll go to Ron Eber, secondary lands discussion. We've already sort of been there, haven't we?
Chair, close. I was under the understanding you might have some questions on that. I hadn't prepared any formal comments on secondary lands. It's a huge topic. I should say for the record, Ron Eber, I'm the farm and forest land specialist for the department. So it's really a matter of what you would want me to discuss as opposed to anything formal I had to add. I was here to assist the director if that issue came up.
Okay. Does the committee have specific questions for Mr. Eber? Okay. Thank you very much, gentlemen. We will move to Oregon Land Use Law and Policy Review. Harlan Levy. While Harlan is setting up, we're going to recess for 5 minutes to work with the sound system.